Hello, board game fans, and welcome to another episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. This is episode 234, and joining me, Tom Brewster.
Pip, this is all wrong.
Is Philippa Waugh.
This is terrible. I don't know what's happened to the podcast. It's become all stuffy and formal.
Well, I was just reading off the auto cue. Is that not what we usually do?
We're here live in the studio recording this podcast about the board games that you need to be, that you and your children need to be aware of today.
It has been a great week in board games.
Oh, no.
I don't know if it has. I just thought I'd like try and bring the positivity in, Tom.
If you really wanted to bring the positivity in, you could say that like it's a great week in board games, as every week is in board games, because board games are board games and they're always fun.
Cardboard stocks are up. The weather is good.
Plastic is
bad.
On the, what do they say when a stock is, it's tanking.
Oh no.
That would be good board game news. Wood is on the rise. Plastic is going down.
It's just meeples, meeples, meeples. I don't think I've even really understood what the news is at this point.
No. I think that's always the first thing they talk about on the news.
Mm. Well, I thought I would do the economics section.
Yeah, famously, they open the news with the economics section right at the start. They go, stocks, 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 ladies and gents. They're going crazy.
Well, today in board gaming, the lost continent of Atlantis is losing its citizens, requiring them to take refuge on nearby islands and fight monsters. There is also other things happening at sea. For instance, monsters in the form of dragons, which Tom, our roving reporter, will bring you now.
I don't want to take part in this podcast anymore. I just want to hear you read the board game news. Like, this is the new recurring feature. It's Pip reads the board game news. Were you referring there to the two games we're covering today, Orichalcum and Sea Dragons?
I was, yes. I'm looking forward to your report on Sea Dragons, live from the scene.
Shall we dive in?
Yeah. What's the deal with Sea Dragons, Tom?
Pip, I'm live on the scene and I'm under the water in Sea Dragons, a game that's designed by Yaniv Kahana, Pini Schechter and Simone Luciani. I apologise if I got any of those names wrong. It also has art by Weberson Santiago. Oh, it's a stunner and it's published by Fractal Juegos. And this is a game where you play as big sea dragons, try to sink pirate ships, get gold and earn points. That's the thing that dragons are really after. You know, the dragon's horde is just some veeps that it's sitting on top of at the end of the game. I showed you a picture, or you looked at a picture of this game, and you were enticed, maybe, by its visual style. This is a good-looking game.
It's very the traditional Loch Ness Monster kind of aesthetic, isn't it? You've got those sort of the half circles that come out of the sea in across the tiles and just look absolutely lovely. So, yeah, I was entranced from that one picture, and now I would like to know what was going on.
These dragons are going full wiggly mode in this game. This is a super simple game. You have this big grid board in front of you that's made up of sort of four quadrants. That board is dotted with all these little pirate ship tokens that you can see floating about. They're all in different colours all across the grid, and you'll see these little whirlpool spaces and gold coin spaces. And then in front of you, you've got this whole load of these wooden wiggly dragon pieces in your personal supply. On your turn, you're going to do this three-step process. Incredibly simple. The first thing you do is you're going to play a card from your hand. You only have a hand of two cards, and these cards have a sort of Tetris piece on them. It will show you a sort of arrangement of squares that you're now going to recreate on the board in dragons. So if you have a sort of lightning bolt Tetris piece or wiggly one, then you will recreate that using your little dragon pieces somewhere on the board. The restrictions of how you can place it are pretty simple. You may place your dragon either adjacent to the very center of the board, where there's a sort of compass rose in the middle, or adjacent to someone else's dragon. But you can never touch one of your own dragons with one of your own dragons orthogonally. You can place these dragons on those little whirlpool spaces I talked about earlier, but that's going to cost you some money. You've got a little personal supply of gold coins, and those gold coins are also points at the end of the game, so whether or not you want to do some getting in the way or not is up to you, because it might cost you some points. And if you slap your dragon down on one of those pirate ship tokens that I talked about earlier, you collect them and you can then cash them in for these contracts that are on cards at the top of the board. So one contract might require you to collect 2 purple pirate ships and 1 red pirate ship. And if you do that, you can cash it in for like 20 points or something.
So are these bounty hunters?
I think there's actually a little bit of that written into like the theming of the game, which I didn't realize because I looked at this and it's like an abstract puzzle. And I was just sort of like, yes, a game where your dragon's in the sea, what of it? But the description on BoardGameGeek says, humanity has become more daring when sailing the seas. More and more pirate ships venture into the forbidden seas of the gods, endangering their underwater kingdoms and the strange creatures that live there. In Sea Dragons, you must protect the seas by sinking pirate ships, collecting their treasures, and becoming the legendary protectors of the aquatic kingdoms.
Ooh.
Yeah. Apparently, you're also a family of sea dragons, which is really nice. There's sort of like a criminal mafioso vibe to the fact that you're taking out hits on these pirate ships bobbing around in your house. It's delightful.
I love that. You've got little jobs at sea. Brilliant.
To round out sort of how this game works is that once you've placed your little dragon down onto the board, and also I should highlight, if you do put a dragon next to someone else's, they're going to collect some coins, which are the things you can then spend. Well, they're worth points, but you can also spend them to go on those whirlpool spaces I talked about earlier, so you've got a bit more freedom to place. You then draw up another card, and you will draw a card from one of 3 decks, and each of the decks has cards in it that will have dragons of different sizes. So there's a small deck, a medium deck, and a large one. And so the small one, your dragons will only be 3 spaces big. The large one, they'll be 5 spaces big. So it's whether or not there's always this decision where you're looking at the board, and as it gets more crowded, you probably want to have smaller dragons so you can fit them in between other people's and get some, you know, little crafty ways of pinching some pirates where you wouldn't normally be able to reach that if you had a really big dragon that wouldn't fit on the board, because obviously you can't place your dragon over the top of someone else's. Pip, I found this game to be quite pleasing. It's a nice little puzzle, and I had a relaxing time playing it, but in an increasingly common sentiment on this podcast, I don't think it's amazing, but I think it's really nice. I had a really good time playing it. It was very chill. It was very relaxing. It had enough little crunchy little decisions here and there to keep everyone occupied, but not so much so that we couldn't just have a chat while we were playing. It's in that kind of pocket. You know the kind of game I'm talking about?
Yeah, exactly. I like the look of it as well. And that's sort of, that's actually a really good thing for that kind of game, because you know, you're not sort of being distracted by loud or weird design decisions. You're kind of like, yes. Yeah, this is a soothing Sea Dragon experience with sort of, you know, rather than the red, yellow, blue and green, you know, like those very... obviously, apart from green, primary colour kind of basic board game things, whereas yes. This one is like pink and lime green and orange and purple. And that's like increasingly, it's maybe this is like the weirdest niche observation, but I'm noticing that people are bringing in those sort of slightly different colour palettes for the pieces of things or for the factions in things.
Yes.
And that's kind of like, it's just been an interesting little vibe shift, I think.
I so much prefer that to the like Hands of Teutonica is a game that the whole team at Shut Me Down really like. It's this big old German Euro game about blocking routes, and it takes, Quinn's, one of my favourite lines in that review is he compares that game's visual style to the texture of a soiled bandage. And I think that's so disgusting. But like, you look at a picture of that game and like, he's spot on. But all the components for that game are like red and blue and yellow, and they're like mass produced and they're ugly. And that has a place in those crusty old Euros. But goodness, doesn't this look nice if it even just strays a little bit from the normal colours you'd expect in a game, the big bold primary things. I love it when there's just a slightly different colour palette. And this one isn't crazy, but it's just enough to really like pop off the table when you have it all set up.
It looks really... looks tactile. You know what I mean? Like, I can imagine, like, even between my turns, I'd be just like fiddling with the pieces absentmindedly.
Absolutely. And there's something really like, because it's a game of like, because of those placement rules where you have to place next to someone else's dragon, but you can never touch your own. It is this game of like trying to sort of like squeeze in this like little shape in between all the other ones. And there is something very pleasing about sort of socketing in a dragon into the exact right spot that you've spotted for it.
Yeah, it's a lot like all of those sort of, you know, like Baron Park or whatever. You're like, yes, the exact right shaped piece has come my way and now I'm unstoppable.
Exactly. There's something though that like, so I forgot to explain quite an important part of the game, which is like the reason that the board is split up into these four quadrants is because as well as collecting coins and sinking pirate ships, one of the things you get points for at the end is this area majority mini game, where at the end you look at those four quadrants of the board and whoever's got the most dragon pieces in it is going to be, you know, they're going to win. I think it is 3 points per whirlpool in that quadrant. And I think that's super interesting as a thing, because what you can do and what we found ourselves doing was frequently trying to squeeze dragons into these little spaces and covering up a few of the whirlpools while we were doing it. And that's an interesting decision, because it's like, yes, you are increasing your stake in that territory, but if you're doing it clumsily, you're actively harming the points that you're going to get out of it. And there were also some very interesting things, because you can also go across between quadrants. You count as having a dragon in both of the quadrants, but crossing the lines in the middle costs you money, like as if you were touching a whirlpool. But there were some really interesting plays going on where someone knew that they were losing in one of these territories, and yet they sort of snaked their dragon in and out of that territory just so it covered up a couple of whirlpools. And it cost them some money, but also it meant that like that person who had like four dragons lost like 12 points or something, because they wiped out like three whirlpools in one. And there's a lot, like when we started playing it, we took our turns really quickly and we're just like throwing dragons onto the board. But by the end, there was some really lovely like tension emerging that I think is quite special. Here's the thing though, Pip.
Yes.
And this is maybe a comparison that's going to make some people wither and cringe, because they'll think I'm being derivative and boring and mean. But have you ever played the game Blockus?
I know of it, but no.
Oh, okay. So. It's basically like, it is this sort of game, but distilled down. Like, Sea Dragons, to me, feels like, if you were to be really uncharitable, Blockus, but you put a load of extra systems on top. And, like, Blockus is kind of like, I don't know, I'm going to check now to see. Okay, the board game world doesn't like Blockus. They've given it a 6.9 on Board Game Geek. But it is this very pleasing abstract about essentially playing competitive Tetris, where you've got these Tetris pieces, but you're trying to cut off your opponent and, like, limit the amount of area that they have. And this game has a lot of the same feelings, but I think it's just twice as much of a teach for about the same amount of game, if that makes sense.
It's like, what if Blockus had a theme?
Yeah, exactly. What if it wasn't completely abstract? It was dragons instead. And to be fair, that theme and that production is so much nicer than Blockus, which still, to this day, refuses to look any nicer.
Well, that Blockus is one of the sort of the yellow, red, green, blue candidates.
Which we were just rallying against so boldly at the start of this podcast.
It's our new campaign.
Remove all primary colours from games.
And green.
And green.
No.
An honorary primary colour.
Well, so I'm curious, how many people did you play Sea Dragons with?
We only played it with three.
Okay, because when you were saying about like the pleasing puzzle of towards the end of the game having those more crunchy decisions or trying to fill in gaps and that being really satisfying when you could do that, I was wondering how well that feeling could come up in a fewer player setup. Or, you know, whether you really needed it to be that sort of the, you know, there was a sweet spot. There's usually a sweet spot with these kinds of things, right?
I think it goes up to five players. Okay. And I think the thing is, though, is that you have a different amount of dragons based on that player count. So at three players, the game gives you more dragons to play with, whereas at five you have a few fewer. So I wonder if it works out as the same number of dragons on the board at the end of the game either way. You're just more limited in where you can place them in a three-player game because of that rule that means you can't touch your own, and proportionally more of the dragons will be your own, I suppose.
I'm assuming that's to stop it becoming too confusing if you like cross your, you know, if you tangle your own dragon round on itself and like lose where it ends.
There's also, though, I do think, I'm thinking about with there being more players, I do think that, like, one of the things that's nice about this game is that you have all these little, like, mini micro decisions, right? When you're placing a dragon down, you're not just thinking about what you get out of it, but what opportunities it affords your opponents. You're thinking about the contracts, you're thinking about what card to take next, and you're thinking about how it's going to go. The problem with that means that you're doing a lot of thinking before your turn even starts, and someone's action at the end of their last turn can really throw yours into disarray. So I imagine when you get up to 4 and 5 players, it becomes a little thinkier, because you're more likely to have your plans, like, set back to square one by someone doing something a little wiggly that you didn't expect, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
but that's
kind of,
I feel bad for raising that as a criticism, because that's true of a whole lot of games.
Oh, yeah. Did you win, Tom?
Did I win?
Yes.
No, I lost. We played with friend of the show, Jack, who demolished us at all of the games that we played that evening, and every evening we play games with him. He completely puts me to shame. Congratulations, Jack, on your many, and I was going to say completely earned victories, but that sounds like I'm being sarcastic.
You are.
Yeah, deep down.
You do want to undermine that winning streak, I feel. In other news, we have got the latest on the Exodus from Atlantis in Orichalcum, the board game. So, Tom, do you know of Orichalcum, the board game?
I've seen a picture of its front cover and contents, and I'm confused as to what it is.
Okay, so that's actually a useful thing for you to have said, because something that I realised is that the front cover really threw me off. And I know that a lot of people are like, oh, the art style is lovely, and it is, but... Mm. I thought it was possibly a sort of ancient Greek themed American football game when I first saw it.
I was going to say the guy on the front cover looks exceptionally chiseled.
I know. And it kind of looked like he was like kneeling down to put the lace up egg, you know, into the right position for the kicking or whatever it is that people do. And I might be thinking of rugby.
You know, they're 99% the same sport. I'm sure we're not going to get any emails about that.
Mm-hmm. So, Orichalcum is a light 4X, pleasantly cartoony game about trying to get 5 victory points while exploring an island that you and your people have landed upon. The basic setup is that you've each got a player board. Each player board is slightly different, so you're all on different islands is essentially the conceit, I believe. So you start building out from whichever dock you have decided to start from. You're placing these little terrain tiles, you are building little buildings, you are mining ore, training hoplites, and trying to kind of attract the useful attention of some titans in the process of doing all of these things. When I say first 5 victory points, that essentially just means you have to forge 5, well, you have to create 5 of any combination of the following. So you've got titans that you can slot into a victory point space, only one, unless you've got a special building that lets you, you know, house the attentions of more than one titan. There are also temples that you can build and Orichalcum medallions that you can forge using the ore that you have mined.
I'm looking at the board now, and do they like slot into the little sockets at the top?
They do. It's so pleasing.
That looks incredibly pleasing.
It's so good. The titans are these roving victory points, so you can gain them pretty easily and lose them pretty easily, because each titan will just go to the latest player to have either reached 3 of their particular terrain type all connected, or expanded at least 3 terrain type area. So yeah, you can move those around quite a lot. And I actually ended up a bit sort of, I was avoiding titans rather than actively using them, because I was like, well, that's not a stable victory point, is it? I'll be building my house upon the sand. So on your turn, You are picking an action type and a terrain piece from this little grid in the center of the player area. The things that are further towards one end will be free. Things on the other end cost hoplites as part of picking them up if you want to pick them up early in the turn. And after a person has picked up a thing, everything slides down towards the cheaper end. So, you know, it's so board games. And that is obviously pretty standard. I'm probably explaining it to people who are like, yes, please get to the point. But it's obviously that has an element of strategy there. And when you have chosen the thing, you place the tile on your terrain, building out. You can either try and match terrains together if you want to try and attract the relevant titan. Or what I was doing a lot of is you can try deliberately to have non-matching terrain types, because you can only build temples on sort of like the diamond shape things of four different terrains.
I can see that they're like sort of big splooshy overlays that you just slap down, and I've only just noticed that they're sort of covering loads of different types of terrain. So it's like a little spatial puzzle, but it can kind of, it's pulling you both ways a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of like you can do one, but it will be at the expense of the other. So, you know, there's a little bit of wiggly decision making. So, the types of terrain are pretty standard board gamey things. There's water, there's like, I think it's stone, forest and sand, you know, the only terrain types there are really. Apart from, Tom, volcanoes. So volcanoes are wild if they are uncovered, but the second you have put them out onto the selection plate, and once you have then put them onto your map, they contain a monster. And the problem with monsters is that you can't build anything next to them. Well, because they'll monster it, won't they?
They'll monster it all up. Exactly. That's classic monsters.
So, you know, you'll be needing to deal with those before you can use the terrain type as a lovely wild resource. And also, you can't win the game if you've got monsters. So, you know, it's like, hey, I've got 5 victory. Oh, no, there's a monster. You know?
Oh, no, Medusa's come to my house.
Exactly.
Is turning everything to stone. And not a useful kind of stone that you can spend on things, but just boring stone.
Exactly.
And so are they... How do you deal with them? Do you have to fight them with the hoplites?
Yeah, so you commit to... So that's one of the basic action types. So I had explained about, like, you have these, the selection from the center. You pick up the terrain type that is on that card, and the action on that card is what you can choose to take after you've placed your terrain. So the 4 actions are mining, wherein you generate more of the orichalcum ore. There is building, or construction rather, which is about building, you know, new structures that will let you do more things or be a bit more flexible. Or it is, you know, that's the time when you can place one of the temples. Or that is also where you can build or construct a medallion. So you can lose 5 of your orichalcum ore and get one of the slotted, you know, little medallions to put in the top top of your little board. So that's nice. The next thing is like recruiting or training hoplites. And the final thing is fight. And you can actually fight without hoplites because the first dice roll is free. But because, you know, some monsters, it's one of the, you know, traditional equal to or higher than will kill monster. So obviously if you have a monster that is 10 points, one dice is not going to cut it. So adding hoplites to that fight will mean more dice, which then means more chance of, I believe it is the numbers on the dice are 1 to 5 and then a crit strike that will kill instantly.
Right. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so you can get lucky. So actually you could take down a 10 monster with one dice, but
in theory,
it's a bit unlikely. And you don't actually get that hoplite back if you fail, but if you fail the fight doesn't stop. It just means your turn stops. So you can just like, you leave the hoplite at the feet of the monster to show that you've still got an extra dice committed to that fight. And then when you come back around, you can continue with that. So it's kind of like, yeah, you've spent it, but it's not going to die in a traditional way. I don't know. I'm not quite sure like how that fits in terms of like what your brain is justifying there.
Yeah. I guess it's just a very gamey way of being like, because I think that this is, by the looks of things, like it's very much it looks like quite a solitary sort of puzzle in a weird way, which is actually quite surprising hearing it described as a 4X game, because I feel like one of the core things of that genre is interaction with the other people playing the game at the same time. Mm. And by the sounds of things, it's a little bit more of a solo puzzle where you have that shared market in the middle. But were you paying much attention to what other people were doing outside of tempting the Titans over?
So a bit, because obviously there is, yeah, like I say, the Titan thing. Once you've got a Titan, you can use its special skill once, then it would be exhausted until it got attracted by someone else and you could earn it back, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which can happen quite a lot, but so there's that element. There is also an initiative kind of style of thing, which is why I was mentioning the way that terrain can become cheaper, which is that, so initiative is determined by who has the most hoplites at the end of a round. So going into the next round, it would be like, oh, that person has quite a lot of, you know, armed forces, therefore they get to sort of make the first decision. If you are tied for the most hoplites, the person who currently has the initiative token gets to just choose.
Mm.
They can't choose themselves, so whatever. But I was in a position of needing to just choose between two people, and I was like trying to work out how that would help me, because I was kind of like, okay, well, I don't think that they're going to get this thing, so do I want to essentially go second or third? And will that mean that I can get the tile that I really want that is on the expensive end of the board? And that's not a common decision. I wasn't making that decision loads or anything, but it was interesting when it did happen. And also it introduced a tiny amount of spite, because obviously I did just, you know, choose to go with my heart and annoy someone.
It's always the right decision, really, isn't it?
Mm.
When faced with the option.
So I saw that I could have made a sensible business decision, and then I just went for spite.
And you put it in the bin because you wanted to be an irritant, which is good. It's a good thing to do. Did you enjoy, important question this deep into our chat about Oracle, but did you enjoy it? Did you have a good time?
I actually did. I was a bit sort of annoyed with myself that I hadn't really sort of gone into the Titan stuff more, because when I'm playing a new game to me, like I tend to try and play a bit conservatively, because I'm like, I want to get the stuff that I can be certain of down. And so the idea that one of my victory points was possibly just going to ping off across the table was like, no, no.
Please, I earned that.
So I spent a bunch of time just organizing my terrain for temples and things. So that was, I went heavy on temples, but apparently to gods and deities that I was like not interested in. I was like, go away, but also here's a temple. But yeah, and I liked that, and I liked the placement. You know that I love stuff like Karuba or whatever, where I'm just playing my own little thing. but the Titan stuff definitely made a difference in terms of keeping an eye on what other people were doing. Oh, so the other thing that one can do on one's turn is you can spend your captured monsters or your ore or your hoplites to take an extra turn or to do an extra action. So you could spend like two hoplites to do some mining, or you could spend two monsters to get some more hoplites, or you know, things like that. So I was kind of looking to see, okay, well, that person needs this kind of thing and I am doing this thing. So there was a certain element of, okay, well, I don't think he has enough resources to do the thing that I think he's trying to do, and so I will, you know, I'm safe to do this other thing. I'm not coming up with like a ready example that I can use to illustrate that, which is deeply frustrating because I did play it like a couple of weeks ago, so brain has smoothened in the meantime. But yeah,
that was so, basically a year ago in board game time,
I know, you know? Right. But yeah, so there were definitely whole sections where I was keeping an eye on the others, because, and I think that's actually a lot to do with the victory point requirement being pretty low, you know, it's like five victory points. What is this? And so everyone, you know, like after you've played for like half an hour, everyone is pretty close to, you know, possibly end game. And so you're sort of like looking to see, okay, well, if they're going for this type of victory, or if they, like, you know, you're kind of peeking at their terrain and going, oh, if they get another sand tile, they can put down a temple. And then if they, you know, like that kind of thing. So you are doing a lot of those calculations. And I actually quite enjoyed it. I feel like it had a really good balance for me in terms of the level of detail versus the easy to keep the information in your head straight amount of things. So like it was a really good level of detail for a player like me who struggles with a lot of, you know, like, oh God, there are so many decisions and so many moving parts and stuff. So I think they've done a really good job at, you know, at slimming a bunch of those things down, which is really
That's
good.
What I was thinking, is that it sounds like the fact that you got to very much focus on sort of like almost like a tile laying and sort of adjacency puzzle, whereas some people were playing a sort of slightly different game to you. That is maybe where that 4X feeling lies, in the sense that it has multiple sort of like mini games within it that you can focus your own little sort of like, you can have a little plug out on your own, but it's not going to be a game where those systems are like terrifyingly deep. So that, you know, if you do have to dabble in the other one, it's not going to be a problem, because they're not like, you know, it's not Spreadsheet City. It's a very sort of straightforward boiling down of the systems.
Yeah, like I could see that two of the people that I was playing with were like, they were sort of in a bit of a tussle over a Titan. You know, it was definitely shuttling back and forth. And like, when I stopped to think about it, it was like, because essentially you're just like, oh, well, look, I've got a slightly bigger desert now. And the Titan's like, oh, let me come over and have a look at that. Just like, oh, they're just like little toddlers wandering around. But yeah, they, you know, and so you can exhaust them to get, you know, more ore and more, you know, hoplites and, you know, like those, it's essentially just an extra thing. Yeah, but I needed them to stay well away. I could have done with some of your sea monsters to just like take care of the Titans for me.
This sounds really sweet. I think I'm going to try and seek out a copy of this, because it sounds light and it sounds nice. And like, I looked at some of the reviews on BoardGameGeek before we did this podcast, and a lot of people on there were saying that it's kind of like, there's something about it being a race as well to 5 points, which I find kind of exciting. So yeah, I'm going to check that out. Yeah. I'm going to have a little seek out a copy.
Oh, yay. But yeah, like, yeah, I definitely was thrown by the cover, because I couldn't like not see weird American football thing. And then once it was like, no, I actually have a look at the box, and it's like, okay, yeah. So that's a ship in the background. And I thought it was like an arena, you know, like I thought it was like a person trying for a touchdown in the Colosseum or something, just because of how the the fisheye effect on the box had gone. And I was
literally only just realized it's a boat. It looks so like a Colosseum.
Doesn't
that's
it?
Crazy.
So I was kind of like, oh, that's why I was really curious as to what you had thought it was before I explained anything.
If the designers of this game do want to make an American football 4X game, I would play that. The drop of a hat.
I mean, isn't that basically Blood Bowl?
That's basic. Oh yeah, essentially. Yeah, I suppose it is.
And finally, the weather where you are.
Ooh. What's it like? That doesn't seem very board game.
No, it really doesn't.
Do go on.
Cardboardy.
You've broken the facade.
It's cardboardy.
I like that it's, you know, it's Friday. It's late on a Friday. You know, we could have gone out with a sort of like, you know, a fun bit. We could have gone into the news thing again. But I think both of us have got, it's cardboard weather. That's pretty much the max that we can do at this point. Sorry, listeners.
There's a meeple with an umbrella. That's all you're getting.
There we go. There we go. That's about as far as we can get.
Have a lovely week, everybody.
Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye.